This is Party on the Peninsulas, your weekly update on the people and policies leading Michigan, with Michigan Democratic Party Chair Lavora Barnes.
Welcome back to Party on the Peninsulas. I'm Lavora Barnes. The word this week, demagogue. The dictionary definition of the word, a political leader who seeks support by appealing to the desires and prejudices of ordinary people rather than by using rational argument. A gifted demagogue with particular skill in manipulating the press. That, in one sentence, defines Donald Trump and describes his grotesque speech last week in Grand Rapids. Donald Trump came here to politicize a tragic loss and lie to Michiganders' faces about border security. When President Biden negotiated a tough, fair, and bipartisan border security deal, it was Trump who pressured his MAGA cronies to kill the bill, allowing the chaos to continue. No matter what he said in Grand Rapids, Donald Trump has no interest in being part of the solution, because he doesn't care about border security. He only cares about himself, and whatever he thinks makes him look good. But Michiganders know the truth. Donald Trump has nothing to offer but dangerous rhetoric that promotes hate, division, and violence without making anyone safer. Adding to that, he told the crowd he had talked with the family of murder victim Ruby Garcia. It was a lie, according to Ms. Garcia's sister. Mavi Garcia said neither Trump nor anybody from his campaign has contacted her or anybody in her immediate family. She said her family is close, and she would know if that had happened. It was shocking, she told Wood TV. I kind of stopped watching it. After I heard a couple of misinformations, he said, I just stopped watching it. She said she's angry that Trump and others have turned her sister's death into something political. It's always been about illegal immigrants, she said. Nobody really speaks about when Americans do heinous crimes, and it's kind of shocking why he would just bring up illegals. What about Americans who do heinous crimes like that? When asked about the apparent lie by the Daily Beast, the Trump campaign refused to reveal with whom the criminal defendant candidate talked. There's a link to the Wood TV interview on our website. The Garcia family isn't the only voice speaking out against Trump. The Washington Post published a truly shocking list this week of former top-level Trump appointees who have not endorsed his candidacy. Among them, Vice President Mike Pence, Attorney General William Barr, Chief of Staff General John Kelly, Chief of Staff Mark Mulvaney, Secretary of Defense General James Mattis, Secretary of Defense Mark Esper, National Security Advisor John Bolton, National Security Chief of European Affairs Alexander Vindman, Joint Chiefs of Staff Chair General Mark Milley, UN Ambassador Nikki Haley, Communications Director Anthony Scaramucci, Press Secretary Stephanie Grisham, Deputy Press Secretary Sarah Matthews, White House Counsel Ty Cobb, White House Aide Cassidy Hutchinson, 2016 Transition Director Chris Christie. As we noted last week, you can add to that list President George W. Bush and former Republican Vice Presidents Dick Cheney and Dan Quayle, Republican U.S. Senators Todd Young, Lisa Murkowski, Susan Collins, and Mitt Romney, and even family members slash White House advisors Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner have said they won't campaign for him. An alternate The Word for this week's podcast could have just as easily been hypocrite. How else can you describe a man who very publicly attends the funeral of a slain New York police officer, but has never even contacted the family of a Capitol policeman who died as a result of the January 6th insurrection, or contacted the dozens of police officers who were attacked and injured by his mob? Officer Brian Sicknick's father told the New York Daily News, quote, "He makes sure he gets his face out there. The guy's a criminal. He's the reason my son is dead, because of the riot at the Capitol. He's a publicity hound. Trump does whatever will get him votes and helps Donald Trump. There's nothing good about that man." In a moment, we'll talk about the future of public transit in Michigan with the leader of a new bipartisan group working on the issue, Representative Jason Morgan. But first, an update on some of the week's political and policy news from MDP's Dorian Tyus.
In the news this week, another gangbusters job report on Friday. Employers in the United States added 303,000 jobs in March, soaring past expectations and reflecting renewed strength in a labor market that continues to prop up the broader U.S. economy. The unemployment rate ticked down to 3.8% last month, extending the longest streak of unemployment below 4% in 5 decades. New polling from Data for Progress finds Joe Biden with 47% of the vote and Donald Trump with 46% of the vote in a two-way race. This includes a 43% to 39% edge for Biden among independent voters. The survey then asked voters for their choice in a six-way matchup, including Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Chase Oliver, Jill Stein, and Cornel West. With these third-party candidates included, Biden's vote shares drops by 6 points to 41%, while Trump's drops by 4 points to 42%. Governor Whitmer has signed the Michigan Family Protection Act, a package of common sense bills that make it easier for Michiganders to start a family, save time and money on government paperwork, and be treated equally under the law. The package repeals an unjust ban that made Michigan the only state in the nation to criminalize surrogacy contracts and better protect surrogates, parents, and children so that more Michiganders have the support they need to start a family. With two special state house elections this month, one of the Republicans running is supporting banning abortions in Michigan. Michigan Advance exposed MAGA Republican state house candidate Josh Powell for opposing abortion without exceptions of any kind. Powell is the Republican nominee running in the April 16th special election for the 25th House District, which includes the cities of Wayne and Westland. His opponent is Democrat Peter Hertzberg, a Westland City Council member. The Michigan Independent has reported that Mike Rogers' consistently anti-abortion record includes repeatedly co-sponsoring bills to suspend FDA approval of mifepristone, back a federal ban on abortion, and co-sponsored 4 different House bills that would have declared that life begins at the moment of conception. The story notes Rogers co-sponsored 2 bills to withdraw FDA approval of mifepristone pending a mandatory review by the General Accounting Office, despite FDA declaring mifepristone is safe and effective based on a thorough and comprehensive review of the scientific evidence. Michigan U.S. Representative Tim Walberg suggested that nuclear weapons should be dropped on Gaza, which his office said was a metaphor to support Israel's swift elimination of Hamas. The Lenawee County Republican said, quote, "It should be like Nagasaki and Hiroshima. Get it over quick." The statement comes from a video circulating on social media referencing the Japanese cities that the U.S. dropped atomic bombs on at the end of World War II. Walberg also was heard in the video speaking out against humanitarian aid for those in the Gaza Strip, saying, quote, "We shouldn't be spending a dime on humanitarian aid." Democrats from across Michigan will gather for the 2nd annual MDP Rural Caucus Summit, April 11th through the 13th at Shanty Creek Resort in Bel Air. Formed in 2017, the caucus seeks to support rural candidates with the funds and information for greater success at the ballot box. Among the speakers will be Senate Agricultural Committee Chair Debbie Stabenow, Biden campaign pollster Celinda Lake, Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist, and longtime political consultants Mark Brewer and Jeff Timmer. Registration information is on our website. Links to these and other stories are on our website, partyonthepeninsulas.com. For Michigan Democratic Party headquarters in Lansing, I'm Dorian Tyus.
Joining the podcast this week is the co-chair of the newly formed Bipartisan Public Transit Caucus, Representative Jason Morgan of Ann Arbor. The son of a commercial fisherman, Representative Morgan was raised in Pinconning. By working part-time and thanks to state and federal student aid, Representative Morgan worked his way through college as a first-generation college student, earning a Bachelor of Arts degree in political science from Northern Michigan University. He later earned a Master of Public Administration from the Ford School of Public Policy at the University of Michigan. Representative Morgan served for 6 years as a Washtenaw County Commissioner and was elected as the county's first ever LGBTQ-identified person to serve as chair of the Board of Commissioners. He also served as a Northern Michigan University trustee and is a service member of the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary. Over the last 15 years, Representative Morgan has worked in various leadership positions in Michigan and Washington, D.C., for Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson, and in senior staff positions to 5 members of Congress. Much of his career has focused on higher education, including working as a director of government and community relations, and later teaching government at Washtenaw Community College. He discussed the challenges facing public transit with our Walt Sorg.
Representative Jason Morgan, thank you for joining us so much on the podcast today.
Yeah, hi, Walt. Great to see you.
Good to see you as well on a subject that hasn't gotten a lot of attention in the legislature for a long time, public transit. What motivated you to reach out to Republicans in both chambers as well as Democrats to form a caucus to talk about this?
I am certainly very excited about public transportation, along with my co-chair, Mike McFaul, Representative McFaul from Hazel Park area. We have spent the last year talking to folks about public transportation and trying to understand why, for years, a lot of folks have said that they support public transportation, but we have not made as many significant investments in this area as it would seem that you would if so many people support it.
One of the challenges facing public transit in the immediate future is funding. A large part of the state funding for public transit comes from the gas tax, which, as everybody knows, is slowly shrinking as EVs start taking over. Funding, I would assume, is going to be really your first challenge that you have to face.
Well, so you're not wrong. The further we dive into looking at public transportation, it is very clear and apparent that funding is a significant challenge, but I don't think it's an insurmountable challenge. What we have started with is just reaching out to our colleagues across the aisle, Republicans, Democrats, House members, Senate members, and asking who's interested in public transit and who wants to work on this with us. Because I think the amount of interest and enthusiasm is a key barometer of how much you might be able to accomplish. And we have been overwhelmed by the positive response we have. 46 legislators have expressed interest in joining us in this transit caucus, which we are thrilled about. And I think that is going to really allow us to have a much broader conversation than we were originally thinking.
We have public transit systems of varying levels of success throughout the state in the medium cities. And of course, Southeast Michigan, you've got a very large one. What about these smaller areas? What does public transit mean to them? What does the work of your caucus mean to them?
I don't know if many folks know this, given that I represent Ann Arbor in the legislature today, but I grew up in very rural Michigan, Pinconning, Michigan, which at the time was in the first congressional district, and went to undergrad up in Marquette, Michigan, even further north. And so I am very familiar with what it's like to live in rural America, as well as living in Southeast Michigan in one of the major urban centers here with Ann Arbor. So our priority really is thinking about everybody in our state. In many ways, rural communities need public transportation just as much as urban areas. It's often more expensive because of the lower density, but in many cases, just as important, if not more so, to get seniors to their doctor's appointments, to get folks who don't have the ability to drive or don't have a car to different things that they need to get to in the community, to get veterans to appointments and services. There's a whole lot of need in rural Michigan that I think a lot of folks don't realize.
When you talk public transit, are you talking just buses, or are you thinking along the lines perhaps of what is the case in Europe, where the biggest public transit systems are rail?
Yeah, so there are varying degrees of what is possible. We're thinking about rail, buses, door-to-door type services, and any other innovative ideas that folks have to get somebody from where they start to where they need to go. Generally, the most cost-effective public transit at this time in Michigan tends to be bus services, and then continuing to increase frequency and ridership and service areas. But we really want to focus on rail as well. there are plenty of opportunities to secure more federal dollars into Michigan if we're able to connect our rail infrastructure between Michigan and Ohio and Canada and our surrounding communities, surrounding states, and a surrounding country. If we're able to make some of those expansions and create those relationships, there is an opportunity to secure a lot more federal money coming into our state for rail infrastructure.
As you mentioned federal money, I can't help but recall that the Secretary of Transportation is a resident of Traverse City.
He is, and we are well aware. So we would love to help him get all over the state by rail, and we'd love it if he wants to help us out too. So we're definitely going to be pursuing any and all federal opportunities to apply for funds that we can. And hopefully, I think, having a really receptive ear there. The thing I'll say is that it seems that the current federal administration, President Biden, Secretary Buttigieg, and others are really receptive and supportive of public transportation.
Well, we know Joe Biden loves trains.
Right, exactly. Especially trains. So that's also part of this caucus, is there has never been a better time to try and pursue public transportation in Michigan. And so if we can't do it now, then frankly, I don't know when we're ever going to be able to do it, because the momentum is here.
In addition to the implications for moving people around and for impacts on the economy because of mobility, you're also talking about implications for energy and climate change, both very positive. And again, it's a nice coincidence that the Secretary of Energy, who's very into this, is also a Michigander by the name of Jennifer Granholm.
Yes. So we think we should have the most supportive federal partner that we could ever ask for. What I found, though, is it really comes down to us doing the work in Michigan. We have to prove that we can sustain funding for projects that might get federal funding. We have to prove that we're willing to work regionally within our state and within the Midwest region to develop projects. And we need a long-term vision for what we want to see in our state, something that doesn't exactly exist today. And so that's where we have our work cut out for us. We're not just thinking about one little thing today. We're thinking about what does a long-term investment in expanding public transportation look like.
Would the symbolism of this happening in the home of the world's auto industry be significant as you develop a program, both in terms of funding and in terms of the reach of public transit?
I would say so. One of the things that I believe the auto industry is seeing today is that they also need to be supportive of public transportation, because they're hiring, because the auto industry is transitioning a little bit in terms of what their workforce looks like. There are a whole lot of additional younger workers that they're hiring today for all the different tech features and innovative things that are in our cars. So I think the auto folks are also hearing that they need to have vibrant, livable communities with public transportation, housing, and walkable amenities if they're going to attract a really high-quality workforce of the future.
And it would also make it easier to park in Ann Arbor.
Yes, I would love to not have to drive my car anywhere in Ann Arbor ever again. As somebody who grew up in rural Michigan, driving in cities is my least favorite thing. So that may have something to do with my passion for public transportation.
That might be a conflict of interest there. What's the next step for your caucus?
So we have a pretty targeted plan here. The first step here was to organize and find out who's all interested. We've done that. The next step is to help educate all of our members on how public transportation works and what funding mechanisms are available for public transportation to get them up to speed. And so we're working on scheduling out that next step. The step after that is really identifying short-term asks for public transportation, funding and policy, and identifying a long-term vision and long-term strategy for expanding access to these services. And so I think we're on the right track, and we have a lot of folks really motivated. So I feel pretty good about where we're at.
I find it really impressive. Nearly one-third of the legislature has joined your caucus. That's a pretty large number. And very difficult to get that much agreement on anything in the legislature.
Yes, I will admit I was surprised at how many legislators said they were interested and how many are interested in learning more about the process and how it all works and the funding side of it. Especially notable is we have had really receptive and supportive chairs of the appropriations subcommittees on transportation. So Rep. Ranjit Puri and Senator Kleinfeld have both been really receptive at trying to do everything they can to support this effort. So that's great. They're both part of the transit caucus. And on the policy side, Representative Shannon and Senator Erica Geis have also been part of this caucus and really receptive to the ideas that members bring forward.
Now, this is really exciting. Representative Jason Morgan, thanks so much for joining us today and filling us in on something really substantive the legislature is getting accomplished.
Thanks so much, Walt. Great to be with you.
This week's GOP outrage is a statement by Republican Congressman Tim Walberg suggesting that nuclear weapons be used to end the war between Israel and Hamas. Walberg was answering a question from a constituent during a town hall in Dundee about the United States' plan to build a floating pier off the coast of Gaza to deliver humanitarian aid. "Why are we spending our money to build a port for them?" someone asks in the video. Walberg, who is not seen in the video, responds by saying that the United States shouldn't be spending a dime on humanitarian aid, and then references the two Japanese cities where the United States dropped atomic bombs during World War II. "It should be like Nagasaki and Hiroshima. Get it over quick," Walberg said. According to audio of Walberg's response, provided to the Washington Post by Walberg's office, after the congressman said, "Get it over quick," he added, "The same should be in Ukraine." So far, there's been no condemnation of Walberg's statement from anybody in the Republican Party, state or national. That's this week's report from your Michigan Democratic Party. I'm Lavora Barnes. Thank you for listening.
Paid for by the Michigan Democratic Party, 606 Townsend, Lansing, Michigan, 48933.